passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
And what a manic Monday this is. You expect a lot of the things that we saw yesterday and today a little bit later in the season, but it happened yesterday morning and it continued today. What are we talking about? Coaches being replaced even before the end of the season. Welcome to Monday. We have a lot on our scoreboard for us today, but the headlines scream change, and it's all about what's happening right now, what has happened at A&M and at Mississippi State. But what about the Dogs? On the football field, there was something to talk about, and the Dogs put their most impressive game of the year against Ole Miss, a team that was flying high, heading into Athens. Meanwhile, Nick Saban dropping the mic, talking about those naysayers who doubted his team back after the third week. Saban went up to the Bluegrass and put a beat down on the Kentucky Wildcats. And look at this. The coaching changes continue. Fisher out. The comparisons to Kevin Sumlin in a moment. Eli Drinkwitz. Talk about eviscerating a program. That's exactly what he did to the Tennessee Vols. Eli Drinkwitz later on.
How about the Tigers?
I stand on
business. Business is booming. Business is booming.
Well, that's some of the good, but as we alluded to, and you know it well, the bad continues. You wouldn't have thought after a 31-point win that the coach for the winning side would be the first one to go, but that's exactly what happened yesterday in College Station as Jimbo Fisher let go. Ross Bjork met the media about 6 p.m. last night.
I determined at this point, and for lots of reasons, our program is stuck in neutral. We should be relevant on the national scene. Something is not clicking, something is not working, and therefore, something had to give in order for Aggie football to reach our full potential.
And the man who broke the story on Sunday morning while many of us were still in bed was Billy Lucci from TxAgs. Billy joins us right now from College Station. Billy, what was the turning point? What happened, and how did we get to what Ross was talking about there?
I'll tell you what. I said going into that Ole Miss game after what happened in Knoxville, so whichever you want to – I don't think we're having this conversation today if A&M won in Oxford last weekend. And heading into that game, I said this was a turning point. It might be the biggest game Jimbo Fisher's coached at A&M. And it kind of came out of nowhere. I just, like that, started sensing, feeling a change, kind of a wind shift here in College Station in terms of how close people were to reversing course and saying, you know what, if we have to, we'll find that money. And had he beat Ole Miss, I think A&M sitting at 5-2 in the SEC right now. They lost to Ole Miss. It extended a lot of very negative numbers that in a vacuum, losing at the last second on the road to number 11 is no big deal. But losing to Kiffin for the third time in a row, losing to the Mississippi programs for the, you know, 0-5 against them, 9 in a row on the road, 10-11 since the start of last season, those numbers became too insurmountable, too overwhelming. And the problem that Jimbo had also was there was a long ago scheduled Regents meeting that had nothing to do with A&M football scheduled long before any of this went down for the following Thursday. And as you know, Paul, like I do, and you're well connected down here too, you downplay it, but I know you are. There are A&M fans, Bama fans, it doesn't matter where. The decision makers typically, what we tend to forget sometimes in the media and in the fan base, they're fans too. And so when the pregame shows all morning are laughing about A&M and Kiffin's comments and A&M does less with more, Nobody does less with more than A&M and Jimbo. You know, they're repeated time and time again because there is some truth to it. And that Saturday was a chance to kind of prove that wrong. And you could have gone 5-2 with your backup quarterback in the SEC. And like I said, we're not sitting here. But you lost that game, and I think that tipped it over the edge, which is a little ironic because it started about 2 years ago when A&M was number 11, looking to go to back-to-back New Year's Six bowl wins coming off that Bama win. They went to Oxford and lost, and they've been like 12-14 since as a program.
In terms of what happened in that meeting, was it just a coalescing around the idea that whatever it's going to take, we have to do, we just can't sit here and let this program fester?
I think that's exactly what it was. And I think it was, the first question was, is this what we want to do? I think the first question was, is this what we want to do? Is this truly stale, and can it not be reeled back in? You know, what good does doing another year do? Can it be turned around? Forget about the money, because it's an extra $9 million. What do you stand to lose if you don't change, and that portal hits December 4th and you have a mass exodus because the trajectory of the program didn't look like anyone that these kids picked A&M over at the time? All the schools they considered are trending higher or already established higher. So I think that was a big fear of kind of what was to come versus the odds that this thing could get turned around. And then the second question was, do we have the money? I saw the meme go, or the thing going around where I really do think it was a coincidence. Have you seen the deal where they presented like the $120 or $160 million check from the 12th Man Foundation on the field during the game Saturday night? There was some real irony there, but I think the conversation was, can we afford this right now, and how bad is it going to hurt? And I think the answer is, it's going to hurt, and it's going to probably affect your next hire. And then they had to make the decision if it was worth it. And clearly the answer was yes. And that started to trickle out Thursday night. And then shortly after that, you start finding out, man, they might do it right after this game.
And Billy, let me get to that, because everybody quoting a lot of the usual suspects, but you just said something there that I think everyone heard very clearly. It may affect what happens next. Give us a tutorial on what you think could be happening next.
Well, I think everyone assumes, and I've watched all the shows today that I can, I've listened to everything, I've listened to everyone. Everyone assumes that they just take this big black, you know, George Strait cowboy hat and just start passing it around to all the cattle barons and oil barons, and next thing you know, you've got $100 million. Money is finite, even at a place like A&M. And with the amount they're paying Jimbo, it will absolutely have a direct effect on their pool of candidates. And people just assume they're going to go up over Jimbo and they're going to do more. They can, and I'm not going to sit here today and tell you they won't. You know, you could, there, as you know, there are donors that can look at Dan Lanning's contract and that $20 million buyout and go, hey, I like that guy, I'll pay the buyout and I'll give you my G5 to fly to Oregon tomorrow. So those guys exist, and they're very involved and very interested in football. So that's not out of the realm of possibility. So if they get a sense that one of those $9, $10 million hire guys that's the right fit wants the job and will take it, then they'll certainly swing for that, and that's in play. But I think when you start to see the real names they pursue, I think you'll see them come from, you know, the less established, less high-priced guys. I mean, you're even thinking about guys like Stoops, Kiffin, Gundy. These are guys that it would cost like $10 million to get them. And for what compared to what they've done versus what you're going out the door with? So it'll be interesting. I think this is going to be a really big, high-priced, another Jimbo Fisher, you know, LSU getting Brian Kelly, USC getting Lincoln Riley type of thing. But I think that's less likely. Far less likely, not impossible, but far less likely than them going a different direction. And I know it's not popular to say right now because he's not doing well in Gainesville, but like you know, a Billy Napier type hire. Texas going after Steve Sarkisian, or, you know, A&M going after Kevin Sumlin a few years ago from U of H, like one of those type hires versus what they just did the last time.
Clearly, this is not something that can take very long. You mentioned the portal, and nobody's got no program in turmoil, Billy, has more valuable players in that portal than A&M. So help us understand what these next 10 days look like for Ross Bjork.
I mean, it's going to be a whirlwind, and I don't think it's just going to be him. I think he's going to head up a very small group. We're talking 3-4 people that I know A&M works with a search firm, so they'll work through that and then go from there. But wild times, I think, starting yesterday in terms of kind of narrowing that list down very quickly, because we talked about the portal date, and it's really open for A&M right now with the coaching change. Elijah Robinson, I think, was a home run move by A&M. The guy's put in his time. He's been as loyal as anyone. He's gotten job offers every year. He's by far their best recruiter. He is by far the one guy you would want to retain more than anyone with an incoming head coach. And he's also a guy that's got relationships throughout the team. So if anyone can kind of keep the ship afloat from now until, you know, a new head coach gets in here, it would be him. But you said it a minute ago, Paul, when A&M fired Jimbo Fisher, you know, the vultures circled and their mouths are watering because there is so much talent on this roster. And it's part of why you hung on to Jimbo as long as you did. It's also part of why you made the decision to make the change, because it was tantalizing how close they were. And you look at the team they put on the field, and they could compete with anyone they played, but at the end of the day, they weren't winning enough. And then you start going, man, with all this talent, you're still not winning. What happens if it goes out the door, or if you lose your ability to sell the hope, which it felt like that was clearly happening here in College Station?
Billy Litchie, who broke the story yesterday morning that shook up the entire sports world, the Jimbo Fisher, was out. Many thanks, Billy. We will talk to you soon. Billy Litchie joining us from College Station. We'll talk a little bit more about the Arnett firing. Obviously, if you've been watching the network all day, you saw that in great detail, and as well as the press conference from Zach Selman about an hour and a half ago. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk to a little bit of a happier individual. Brian Kelly will join us in the bottom of the hour. Right now, we are back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Well, we've got Brian Kelly coming up here in just a couple of minutes, our regular Monday conversation with the coach after a big win over Florida. Bratton joins us. Bruce Feldman, who has literally been telegraphing the Harbaugh news all year long. And Stephen A.M. Smith. Ross Dellinger, some stuff that got lost over the weekend, but the CFP commissioners are about to adjust. They recommended to presidents that the expanded CFP includes 5 AQs for conference champs and 7 at large. This is a significant change. The 6 AQs simply did not work any longer with all the chaos in conference world. Stephen A. Smith, naturally, on his one football conversation today, calling for Deion Sanders to go to Texas A&M. That needs to happen. Deion won't have to buy a cowboy hat if he gets a job. And Jim Harbaugh, America's favorite pinata, spoke earlier, and see if you can figure out what he had to say, because I can't.
The perseverance, you know, and then the stalwartness of these guys. I mean, yeah, Watson, I would have to say, I mean, everybody. It's got to be America's team. It's got to be America's team. America loves a team that you know, beats the odds, beats the adversity, you know, overcomes what the naysayers and, you know, critics, so-called experts think.
America loves this team. It loves an underdog team, especially one that has been in the playoffs the last 2 years and started the season ranked number 2 in the country. This is indeed America's team. We will take your phone calls right now at 855-242-7285. We begin with Dwayne in Louisiana.
Drop the mic. Everybody drop the mic. Hey, Mr. Paul, tell them people they need to drug test Jim Harbaugh for signing like that. See, like he owns something. Hey, for another thing, Mr. Paul Feinbaum, I told you Jimbo Fisher gonna get fired. I've been told you this. You told me I was crazy. You told me that the money they gonna have to get that man, they gonna make no sense to fire that man. And I tell you that money don't mean nothing in no Texas. Did I tell you that?
I really don't remember, but if you did, then congratulations.
You said I was crazy. Hey, tell Peggy from Arkansas, tell Sam Pittman next. Tell her coach is next.
Yeah, I don't think Sam Pittman is buying any green bananas right now.
Hey, he next. Sam Pittman next, all right? Hey, see all the recruits for Texas A&M? All them boys for Texas A&M? We're going to pluck them all. We're going to get Elijah Robinson. That's going to be our defensive line coach at LSU after we get rid of Matt House. When you talk to Brian Kelly, ask him when he's going to fire Matt House because that defense still giving up 500 or 600 yards a game. Hey, I thought it was a process, Mr. Paul Feinbaum, like everybody say, that as the season go on, your team get better. You know what I'm saying? I can't tell that LSU defense giving up 600 yards a game.
Hey, Dwayne, I think you got Georgia State this weekend. I look for a big defensive
performance. Hey, me too. I look for but Georgia State to put up no points. Hey, against the deep. High school. Hey, LSU defense remind me of a high school. I bet you a high school team, number one offensive high school team could rack up 800 yards on LSU defense. Tell Brian Kelly that. When you talk to Brian Kelly, they got a call out of New Orleans say a high school number one high school offensive team could rack up 800 on his defense.
Daryl is up next. Hey, Daryl.
What's going on, Paul?
All good, Daryl.
First for Jim Harbaugh, okay? I know they say, you know, the game is still, if he still signs, he's still got to go out there and stop on the field, right? I get that. But isn't it kind of ironic that the one team they didn't go steal signs from was TCU, and they got beat? So it's got to matter, I would think, a little bit. But, Paul, Jimbo Fisher needs to be sending Jameis Winston a thank you card. Would you agree with that?
I mean, if you take Jameis Winston, he's a mediocre coach.
Dan Lanning, I don't think Dan Lanning is going to leave Oregon to go to A&M. Why would you want to leave Oregon? You have to go play Georgia and Alabama and Texas and Oklahoma every year.
Well, I think Dan Lanning's probably going to get a big pay raise out of it. Alabama's on their schedule next year.
What's that?
Alabama's not even on A&M's schedule next year.
Well, I know. Well, they're not on the schedule, Paul. They don't mean they're still capable. They won't, you know, the possibility of playing them in the SEC title game. I mean, they're still in your conference. I think they're going to hire Glenn Schumann. I think they're going to go after our defense coordinator. Honestly, somebody said Deion Sanders. That would be a mistake. I mean, no way to go there. But, Paul, would you agree that Lane Kiffin, okay, and James Franklin just are never going to win the big one? It's not going to happen.
If you look at James Franklin and Lane Kiffin in big games, you see similarities. At least Lane Kiffin's team showed a pulse in the first quarter on Saturday night.
Well, I mean, Lane Kiffin's a very good offense coordinator, okay? We know that. He just has no defense. All right?
How about that Pete Golding defense on Saturday night? That looked like the old Pete Golding at Alabama.
We came back at that Mizzou game. Offensive line played much better, complete. Mm-hmm. Dominant. Georgia has a great defense and has a very elite.
By the way, I was with a couple of guys the other day on our show, on the Saturday show, and they both said, I think all three said they thought Alabama's defense was better than Georgia's.
We were going to find out, right? How many points did Ole Miss score in Alabama in Tuscaloosa?
I believe it was 14 or 17.
Paul. Brock Bowers didn't look like he missed a beat, did he? This is what Georgia's about, okay? This is how Kirby Smart does things in Athens, okay? Our star linebacker, Dumas Johnson, goes down, right?
Hey, Darryl, we've got to run, but thanks for the call. We're up against a break. Brian Kelly will be right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back here as we really look forward to checking in on these Monday conversations with Brian Kelly off of a huge win over Florida down in Tiger Stadium, a major rivalry game. Coach, thank you very, very much. And just watching the game, you were coaching it. You feel the rivalry between these two schools and what it means to both sides. How are you feeling today?
I was exhausted. I mean, it's a lot more than I really thought. I mean, you know, we played at Gainesville, Paul, last year. And, you know, obviously on the road, you expect that kind of feeling. And but even at home, this is a little different. You know, playing Florida, there is an edge to this game that I did not anticipate. And it's real. And so my second time around here, I'm starting to get a real sense of, each and every week, you better put your hat on because it's real every single week in the SEC.
And certainly the losing streak, or the winning streak, I should say, for LSU over Florida is pretty significant. So I joked with you as we were coming on. It's not really a joking matter in the coaching world about what's been happening. But I would like to ask you about that for a second, because you've been in coaching your adult life, and it comes with a lot of risk and has some rewards. But when you see your fellow coaches, as we've seen in the last 24 hours, two of them go down, what goes through your mind?
Well, the families, that's the part that nobody really sees more than anything else. You know, you see the face of the coach and obviously the fan base wanting to win. And we truly understand that as coaches. We're well compensated. We're put in a position to do things in an incredible environment. But there are families behind this that it's very difficult because you've got kids in school. You're probably going to have to move in many instances. That's the tough part. That's what we see as coaches. But again, it comes with the territory. And I think everybody that gets in it, unfortunately, knows that there is a tough part of this business as well.
Coach, I have to go way back in time when I was a young reporter, but I covered Coach Paul Bryant's final season, and I was with him on his last day and asked him, I said, a lot of people wondered why you didn't retire a year earlier, right after you broke Amos Alonzo Stagg's record. And he said, I couldn't do that. And he says, not only the coaching staff, but, and you know this better than anyone, it's right. How many people depend on that program to be employed?
No doubt. And Paul, I think what's even bigger now is your support staff has grown to the point where, you know, when we were in it, you know, and talking about Coach Bryant, you know, you probably were talking about 20, 25 people. It's upwards close to 100 now that are part of your organization. It's not just your 10 coaches. It's, you know, all of the support staff that go along, recruiting, personnel, nutrition, strength and conditioning. It is such a big operation now. And so you're obviously putting yourself in a position where, you know, if you lose your job, many people are looking for a job as well.
Talking to Coach Brian Kelly after the huge win, and I think it would be incumbent upon all of us to start with Jaden Daniels. You have said some really flattering things about him, which are all true, by the way. And I want you to expound on that here in terms of just what he has meant to your football team.
Paul, I'll tell you, you know, I've been doing it for three decades, and I've always been reticent about, you know, promoting a player, because every coach does that, right? Everybody's going to be, you know, singing the praises of their particular player. And sometimes I was like, you know, that just sounded like, you know, another soundbite. But this kid is so special. Where he's come in just a year is just amazing in terms of being able to throw the ball down the field, recognize defenses, throw the ball from the pocket, run the football. You know, defenses have tried everything, every look from spying them to sending seven to overload pressures to dropping eight. And he's done everything to defeat those kinds of defensive looks. And it's just, as a guy that has purely been in the business as long as I have, I just love watching him. I'll pay to get in the stadium. It's so exciting to watch them play.
And not that you're going to have to pay the rest of the season, but there are a lot of questions about, you know, where he fits into the national scene. And I know a lot of my colleagues believe he is the best player in the country, which brings us to the Heisman question, which gets asked a lot, and, you know, way too early in the season it gets thrown around. But I'm a voter. What would you recommend to those of us who are trying to determine the best player in the country?
Well, look, the Heisman is not just about one game, right? It's about your work the entire season. And he's got the number one offense in the country, the number one scoring offense in the country. I think the offense in which he is commanding is the top 10 in 9 of 10 categories. So from an offensive production standpoint, it's unparalleled from that standpoint. And then the individual play of the quarterback, 600 yards in total offense in one singular night, I think just puts him in a category of the best singular player in the country in terms of what he's done for an entire offense, the number one offense in the country, and then individually. And that's my case for him. And everybody can make their own case. I get it. That would be my case for Jaden Daniels.
Coach, if we could go back to one moment in the game the other night, one of your players was flagged by the officiating, and you were very strong in his defense after the game, and you referenced the previous game with the hit by Dallas Turner on Jaden. I'm not trying to draw you into a conflict with the conference office, but I would like to hear your thoughts, if you don't mind.
Well, what I was trying to articulate is that I did not know that that was being reviewed, because the mechanics of review for me has always been the referee would be looking at the monitor and reviewing the play. Well, that didn't happen in the Alabama game. And it certainly happened because they stopped the game and they reviewed the play the other night when we were trying to make a tackle on a running back. So for me, I was confused as to why was one reviewed and not the other. One was a hit that led to a player being concussed, to the other one where he didn't even make a tackle on a running back that was lowering his head. So there was obviously the emotions of the game right after the game, asked the question, and there was an inconsistency in my mind as to why was one reviewed and not the other. Subsequently, I was told it was reviewed, but the mechanics were different in the sense that the referee was not included in that review at Alabama, whereas the referee was included in this one. So I had no knowledge of that review actually taking place.
When you turned something in, which I remember you saying a week ago, to the conference office, is that like the dead letter box? Do you ever hear anything from them, or do they call you back and say something?
The data is very, very thorough. Okay. With voiceovers, and he'll give us a full and detailed explanation of each and every one that we turn in. So the reporting is excellent in terms of, you know, if we send something in, he's very diligent in getting the information back. Sometimes we agree to disagree in terms of the rationale, and sometimes there's a lot of layers to the rationale. And sometimes, you know, it was just my opinion that we get in the way of just football. But, you know, again, he's got a job to do, and sometimes we agree to disagree.
Very, you come from a background in politics. That's a very diplomatic way of putting it, Coach.
I'm trying to save my money.
Well, yeah, I mean, you absolutely do. Let me just ask you before you go about this week, and not to disparage or diminish the importance of the game. It's one of those special games on the schedule because it's scheduled. But it also comes before a big rivalry game. How do you approach this game, or is it the same, or is it different than the murderer's row that you've just completed?
That's a great question. So, you know, we talked about the Alabama game in terms of our preparation for Alabama. Do we rise to the level of our opponent, or do we rise to the level of our preparation? That would be similar this week. Do we lower our preparation to our opponent, or do we rise our preparation? And so for us, this group, we're not a perfect group, as you've seen in the way we play, we need to continue to work to get better. So this week will be about us. This will be about our preparation and the things that we need to get better at, and use this as an opportunity as a group to get better at the things that we're certainly needing to get better at. And so that's this week, and then go out and really relish the opportunity. These guys only have two more home games left in their career for many of our upperclassmen. So that's how we will attack it this week.
Well, Coach, we enjoy it, as always. We really appreciate your time and look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you. Have a great week.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back here on a manic Monday, if there ever was one. Let's continue. John is up next in Louisville. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. And any word on Sam Pittman yet?
Sam's doing great and getting ready for, give me 1 second, getting ready for Florida International Saturday.
Big game, yeah. Hey, I think your guest pointed out this is about getting a head start on the recruiting class and transfer portal. That's why I think Sam will be gone as well. I see why they – you know, who, Paul, you know who's the happiest man in town today? It's Jimmy Sexton. He collects off Jimbo's severance. He probably fits somebody like Kiffin into the new spot, and then he backfills. I mean, the guy's making a lot of money on this.
Well, I think he has made an enormous amount of money, and so far nobody has spoken out publicly on how he has completely wrecked the ecosystem of coaching salaries.
Right. Hey, and I have to agree with you on that Michigan game, both on Frank. James Franklin is just, I mean, his record speaks for himself in big games. And, you know, I think there's much to do about Harbaugh. He gets to coach the team the whole week. And he just doesn't show up in the sidelines. So trick plays, fourth down calls, that's all that's missing. I think where I have a problem is I think the Big Ten commissioner has kind of embarrassed himself. First, I would say by the fact that he didn't go through the proper due process. And
well,
second,
well, John,
let
me ask you about
move.
That. I keep hearing
sure.
people use the phrase due process. It's a very important phrase in our judicial system, but I'm not sure it's applicable when governing a conference where you have your own set of bylaws, which gives you the right to act in the fashion that Tony Petitti did.
Oh, he has the right. He does have the right. I don't.
And by the
way, has the right too.
Michigan was interviewed by the NCAA, which information was shared with the Big Ten. The Big Ten commissioner. Had conversations with the authorities. So, I mean, to me, due process is when you come down on someone without giving them any right to respond, which is not the case here.
No, I the way I look at it is I look at the statement. He says there's no evidence that connects Harbaugh and staff to this rogue analyst. And that's fine. And he says the team should be punished. I agree there, too. But Harbaugh? I mean, why don't you let the NCAA find the evidence?
And again, let me, I don't want to go into a, you know, civics lesson here, but the 14th Amendment has a due process clause in it. It involves a lot of different things. And I think we use that phrase often, and I'm not saying you did, but I heard Harbaugh say it today. And I think the response by the league office was done very craftily to put the onus on the University of Michigan to protect
Excellent
themselves
point.
From a legal standpoint. By Tom Mars and Harbaugh.
Yeah, I agree there. It should be interesting on Friday. He's supposed to show up to the hearing, too. Hey, Paul, my thoughts on the Heisman vote is it's down to two candidates, and it'll be decided in the Pac-12 championship game. More importantly, which team wins? What's your thoughts?
I think those two, and we're talking about Michael Penix and Bo Nix.
Correct.
I would think are in the best position. You can have a couple of other people show up, but big games really do matter for Heisman moments. And who are the other candidates? Well, Marvin Harrison Jr. could have a big game, too, against Michigan, and I think that could help him. And then he would have a conference championship game. But I don't, Jaden, I don't think he can get a ticket to New York, but I don't think he can win because he doesn't have any big games left. So I think people, you know, get hung up on Heisman, and it's not an exact science. It's a performative trophy, and it matters most what you look like and if you have that moment. Todd is in somewhere. Todd, good afternoon.
Yeah, hey, I'm from Nebraska.
Oh.
We have no love for Jim Harbaugh, but I just say get off the man's back. He has not had his day in court. He didn't do anything wrong personally. He's got a great football team. That doesn't mean that
get to the predicate of your sentence, but do you understand why he was suspended?
Yes, I do. He had a spy.
I want you to explain to us why he got suspended.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I want you to explain your view of why he was suspended.
Well, there was a spy that was acting for the team in Michigan, and some folks attributed it to him. I don't know if he did it. I don't know if it was his action that created
Todd, that. Answer me this. Who is the head of the Michigan football program?
Well, who is the head of the university?
No, I didn't ask you a question. I asked you who is the head of the Michigan football program.
Well, pretty obvious. It's Jim Harbaugh. But Jim,
and are you familiar with the bylaws of the Big Ten, which state very clearly, as well as the NCAA, that if you are, I think it's the NCAA policy, where if you're the head of the program, you are ultimately responsible whether you were cognizant or not. Thank you very much for your call. Nebraska boy.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.